Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com.
In this episode of Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I talk about Gartner's prediction that personalization will die by 2025. We also discuss why personalization without personal information matters, and what the future of personalization looks like for B2B marketers. All that and more on the latest Solo Segment Search Chat, coming at you now. Well, hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm well. Happy New Year, Tim.
Happy New Year. I this is probably going to go live in about a week. So by the time people hear this, it's, you know, 2 weeks into January. They're going to be like, Happy New Year. Jeez, wake up.
Well, you know, it's been, well, what has it been? It's probably been a month since we've done one of these, because between the roll up into the holidays and closing year end business and talking to investors, I've been a little busy,
I'm shocked, Steve. I'm shocked to hear. Yeah, no, that's awesome. But welcome back. Thrilled to be talking to you. And I think we've got a really cool set of discussions today. And I want to start with, there was this thing that came out in early December that talked about, Gartner talked about the fact that by 2025, they predict that 80% of marketers will abandon personalization. And I read this and I thought, you know who's going to have a strong opinion about this? So, Steve, what'd you think when you read that?
Well, you know, when you read headlines like that, I mean, obviously written by a marketer who was very savvy in the ways of content marketing, because it is designed to get your attention. And it certainly got my, it was one of those things that, you know, kind of goes by in your feed and you're like, it's like the brake squeal and you go back up.
Right, the record scratch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like, what? So yeah, it definitely is one of those attention-getting headlines. And what it basically says, I mean, the headline clearly says it all, right? That, you know, in the next 5 years, we as marketers are going to say, hey, maybe personalization's not for us. Which I got to tell you, I rolled my eye after the shock wore off. I rolled my eyes before I really got into it. And, you know, I get what they're saying. I get why they're saying it, and I still disagree. And so here's kind of my thoughts. You know, first let's talk about what are they saying, and they really focus on, personalization from the context of, say, email personalization or mobile, you know, kind of making sure your mobile experience is highly personalized and relevant to you, and largely rooted deeply in PII, right? That, hey, this is Tim, and Tim has been to the
personal
site.
Personal information, personally identifiable
information. You know, as much information, whether it's first party or third party, they can get about an actual human being. And you know, I tend to agree with that. And by the way, as you well know, and I think most of our listeners know, my points of view are largely B2B, seen through the B2B lens, because those are who our customers are. And this is kind of, that's my background, your background. So that's how we think of this. But when I think about the use and role of personal information in that B2B context, you know, I kind of think of it in, to borrow from a famous writer, you know, personalization is dead, long live personalization. Because I do think that there is a large amount of truth to what they're saying. And I do think that the metaphor that's applicable to what they're talking about is really the whole ad blindness that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, banner ads and, you know, all sorts of advertisements on pages mm-hmm. were a thing. And people just learned to ignore them. So it almost didn't matter whether you made them flashing or, you know, they were in motion or whatever, you know, people ignored them. And so that's what happened to a large part of kind of that traditional ad market. Now, of course, the ad market innovated and changed to accommodate that. And I think that's what's happening, what's going to happen here, what's already happening here, honestly, but what's going to happen here. Because I do think that a lot of the some of the B2B models, and certainly all of the B2C models, where it is literally you get the email or you get something on your screen that says, hey, Tim, you know, like ad retargeting and all these other things that are just mm-hmm. like, we've just learned to ignore them.
Right.
Mostly right. because the relevance is low.
Right.
And if the relevance is low, the ROI is low. The businesses are not going right. to get a return on that. So I think at the heart of what Gartner is saying, I think they are absolutely right. Those sorts of things that we have become immune to and had therefore yielded very little in benefit for businesses are going to absolutely go away. And so, right.
So it's not personalization is going away. It's personalization for the sake of personalization, yeah. right? It's not about, you know, hey, Tim, hey, Steve. It's about, you know, is this relevant and does this actually help me as a user accomplish my goals?
Yeah, absolutely. I think relevance is the right word. It's a word we use a lot when we talk about more effective customer experiences mm-hmm. is how do you increase that relevance? So I think that is tremendously important. And before we go into that too far, though, I do want to come back to kind of the other thing they talked about. So they talked about ROI being low and absolutely get that. But the other thing is the thing that we don't talk about a lot, and it really is about customer data management. And
oh, sure.
Right, do yeah. I want to have on my servers all this information, you know, about all these people, right. you know, because I'm just right. one hack away from a lot of that information kind of escaping into somewhere else. And then I'm in trouble. So,
well, that's right. Yeah.
And the regulatory environment and all that stuff's going to change too.
Well, it's funny. I you know this, obviously. I think our listeners probably know this to some degree. I do some teaching at Rutgers Business School, and I teach a course on personalization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I talk about on the customer data management side is that, you know, there are essentially two types of companies in the world, mm-hmm. which is those that have had a data breach. Right. And those that will.
Yeah, that's good.
right. I mean, you know, and I'm obviously being pithy. I'm obviously being, you know, provocative mm-hmm. and the like, you know, but if you're the only people where that won't be true is if you're not on the bad guy's radar.
Right.
Right. Or ideally you're investing so heavily in it that you're actually doing what's necessary to ensure it doesn't happen to you.
Yeah, but, you bet.
But you're still going to have to deal with the attempt. So sure, there's very much a risk factor and a cost factor associated with that that I think tends to be overlooked for people. So yeah, you make a great point there on the customer data management side.
Yeah, and again, that's only going to get worse as regulators continue to, you know, do what they do.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, as I've said in the past, regulators don't do what they do because they like to regulate. They do what they do because there's political pressure coming from the right. humans, right? To say, right. hey, I as a consumer don't trust you. And so right. that's where that regulatory pressure comes from. And so I do think that customer data management is going to be increasingly one of the things that makes that traditional personalization less appealing. And mm-hmm. I definitely hear that from when I talk to companies outside the US, especially when you talk to a European company. You certainly hear that. And when you talk to the more, I don't know what the right word is, savvy.
Folks who are further along the curve, right?
Yeah, but they're, you know, it's funny. It's interesting. I was going to say sophisticated, but there are some very sophisticated people who kind of roll their eyes at this whole customer data management, data privacy thing. You know, we have one client.
Well, and there are some, go ahead. And there are some who are sophisticated and they roll their eyes because they've put the right things in place, you know, 10 years ago.
Well, there you go. Yes.
And, you know, I mean, I think I'm a consultant by trade, right? So I always think in terms of a 2x2 matrix. You know, it's right. It's, you know, how knowledgeable are you about it and how concerned are you about it? You know, and the folks who are knowledgeable about it and not concerned probably are not concerned because they've done the work, right? Yeah. And we'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they're not morons.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting. We have one customer who I remember when I was doing the master services agreement with them. You know, when we read, the thing was like 70 pages long, but one of the reasons was like half of it, maybe more than half of it, what had to do with, it had the GDPR stuff in it. It had the CCPA stuff in it. It had the, I think it was the Argentinian private. I mean, it had all this stuff in there. Right. So here was a very sophisticated company that, as you suggest, way ahead of the curve. And they took it very seriously. I was talking to another tech company, not a customer, would love them to be a customer, but they it was interesting, kind of a moment of candor. They kind of rolled their eyes and said, "Oh yeah, it's that European thing. We love personalization."
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, come on. But again, generally you find that the EU countries and companies based in those countries certainly take this very, very seriously. And I think, again, over time, we're going to see American companies and companies based in other countries that don't have stringent privacy regulations, we're going to see them get on board, just because, again, coming all the way back, it's the humans who are going to demand this, because, you know, we're all tired of having our data stolen, or we're all tired of being marketed into ways that, you know, do cause us to become blind to things. And who wants to live in that world? So.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So given that, if we acknowledge that this is going to be a reality, right, in 5 years, you know, personalization as we know it may not be a thing. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I would look at it. It's not necessarily that personalization goes away, but it evolves in some meaningful way. You know, talk about where you think that is and where we're going.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting that for the hyperbolic headline, you know, the Gartner press release had some good information, and the report itself had some good information really about that, about what should marketers be doing with regards to how they think about personalization. And so let's start with the Gartner report, and then we'll kind of generalize to some of the ways we look at it from a B2B context. You know, clearly understanding the value, right? What is the value of the thing you're trying to achieve? Because that's the problem with, say, email personalization. It doesn't really actually make emails any better or more effective, even though we like you to think they do. So understanding what that value prop is and what the value is you're going to get out of whatever the personalization thing is. And then, you know, and the way we often start with companies is some sort of proof of concept, some sort of pilot. So, okay, well, now let's bring that technology in or bring that capability in and see if it can demonstrate the value that it has and really, you know, get down to, is this thing actually progressing the discussion? Is the content relevant? So relevant that it's causing action to be taken? Are we getting a better yield out of this personalized experience than we might otherwise? And I mean, when we do proof of concepts with companies initially, I mean, that's actually the entire thing. We A/B test personalization off, personalization on. And, and you know, we do that because we're very confident, right? We've seen the numbers. So, you know, it kind of feels a little bit like sleeves off our vest, but we want them to see the data, right? We want them to see, oh yeah, when Guidebox is doing the content recommendation, when Guidebox is doing whatever it does on their website, however it delivers the recommendations, that it actually is delivering an experience that has more value, has more relevance, and is more importantly prompting actions, journey progression, engagement in ways that a non-personalized experience doesn't. So I think that's clearly desirable. So again, proof of concept I think is an important element in the marketer's arsenal to test whether technology is actually delivering the value that it says it will.
Right. And I mean, without getting into our secret sauce and the like, you know, obviously we talk a lot about personalization without personal information, but, you know, just to give people a sense of when we talk about how you do that and, you know, why we think that's the right way to go. And, you know, we've said this lots of times, the more people who do this in the marketplace, the better it is for us, because it's just a validation that, you know, we've got the right approach and all. But, you know, what kinds of things or what, you know, what are we looking at that that defines this in a way that we can talk about without, you know, opening the kimono to everybody?
Yeah, no. Well, so you come back to relevance, right? That's where you start, right? How do you deliver more relevant experiences? And, you know, what's interesting, you know, what we've found out in our journey, because our journey started with kind of the notion of findability, right? How do you make this relevant content more easily accessible? And, you know, what we've discovered is a lot of the information is data that companies could gather. And by the way, we gather for them, right? We gather that data and we use it. And you know, it's things like, do you understand the intent of a visitor based upon their behaviors, right? Behaviors are really key to this. Do you understand where they are in the journey by looking at behaviors? Do you understand what task they're going to accomplish by looking at behaviors? Do you understand what they're interested by looking at content, right? And looking at, you know, what is it about the content that is giving them some indication that it's for them? And I won't go into too much into that because there's some secret sauce there, but it's, it is, it really is looking at that data that's relatively available to you. And many companies have this data kind of locked somewhere in their combination of their CMS, their analytics system, and maybe the CRM system. We actually capture that data ourselves. So we capture it via primary source via our JavaScript. But you know, this is data that doesn't require you to know anything about the person visiting, just to look at their behaviors, to look at their intent, to look at the content, to look at a couple of other things that then you can build that data. You can use to build models, which predicts what they should see next, what the most relevant content is.
Right. No, that makes sense. So I want to come at this from a different angle. And this was something you and I were talking about, you know, before the show, but obviously we talk a lot about personalization without personal information. I know I just asked this a second ago, but I'm going to ask the same question in a different way, which is, you know, in a B2B context, obviously personalization without personal information, when you talk B2C, people can get behind that and get their head around it really easily.
Right.
When you talk about it in a B2B context, you know, does that matter? You know, how does that come into play or how does that matter? Why does that matter in a B2B context?
Well, I think it matters a whole lot less. And let's start with why you want to know this information, right? I mean, everybody would love to know that, hey, this is Tim coming to the website. He's been here five times before. He looked at these three things. And by the way, those are three of the four triggers that go into our system that qualify this as a lead. And so, bing, we want to show him, you know, we want to qualify him and pass that information to the sales force, right? So, that is, in a large sense, B2B companies adopting B2C models.
Yep.
Because that's the models they have to follow, right? They just have that, you know, it's the way the industry kind of started out. It started out with the Amazons of the world and all the other kind of consumer marketing folks creating these models. And so that's, you know, when I talk to B2B executives, marketing executives, that is what they talk about. They talk about these B2C models. And I think the behaviors of B2B buyers are very different. First of all, they're largely anonymous because and they're anonymous no matter how good your information is or your technology is, because the buying cycle is 9 months long. And you know, you might get a chance to cookie them four times, but it's going to be four times over 6 or 7 months. And and by the way, there's going to be five other people on the deal team. Three of them are going to be working at home. One of them is going to be working in India. And so connecting them all together and saying, gee, this is a view of this buying experience is tremendously difficult. Now, possible? Yeah, maybe. What we've discovered is totally unnecessary. That B2C model is not the right model. As I was saying before, you know, your cookies are going to expire. Your information is going to be imperfect. And what you're really, again, coming back to this relevance notion, what you're really trying to do is say, given this visitor that I have in front of me today, which I probably know nothing about because their cookie expired and I can't, you know, retarget them with stuff they've seen before or whatever, How do I engage with them in a way that does give them that high relevance? And again, it's, you know, look at the data that you have, the data you have about every other visitor who might have behaved like this. So there's some lookalike modeling that can go into this, right? Look at the content they're looking at and what does that tell you about where they are in the process, what their intent is, what their topical and their industry interest is. And can you use all that data in the moment to increase the relevance? And so I think what we're going, what we're seeing, you know, as what Gartner says plays out. And as, you know, B2B marketers kind of make a leap over the B2C technology to something different, they're going to discover that those B2C models really aren't the most recent things. I mean, if you look at how cell phones, right, you know, were adopted in India, or how the telephone was adopted in India, 15 years ago, they didn't all of a sudden say, hey, let's run more copper wire to every home in India, right? They said, hey, let's put up these cell phone towers. That's a whole hell of a lot easier. And so I think in the same way, we're going to see this transformation in especially B2B personalization, but probably in personalization alone, that companies who haven't done the traditional personalization are going to make a leap. And honestly, you know, one of the as I thought through this Gartner article, it was this may actually happen sooner than 2025, right? We might see this traditional personalization die very, very quickly, especially in the context of B2B, because other technologies like ours become available and allow B2B marketers to connect with prospects and customers in ways that are highly relevant, that help progress those journeys, that help improve the outcomes and therefore the ROIs without having to know, hey, Tim, welcome back.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense. Well, and it's funny, I agree with you on the timing. You know, I often talk about things happening 5 years from now because my take on it is there's an old quote. I always think of it being attributed to Bill Gates, but I'm sure he got it from somewhere else. Not because I'm knocking Bill Gates, but because I think he acknowledged it came from someplace else. But this idea that, you know, we always overestimate the change we'll see in the next 2 years and we underestimate the change we'll see in the next 10, right? So I always just pick 5 years as the sort of midpoint between those, right?
Sure.
So it probably won't be two. It sure as hell not going to be 10. Right. So yeah, five or fewer seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
no, right?
But change is going to come. And like you said, it will happen in unexpected ways. But everything we know is all these predictions are wrong. And it'll be interesting to see how they play out.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, Steve, you know, we're coming up on time. Obviously, you've talked a lot about how to make more relevant customer experiences. You've talked a lot about why personal information doesn't matter. You know, you've talked a lot about the fact that, yeah, personalization, as we know it, is likely to be dead within the next, you know, 5 years or give or take. But anything else you want to chime in with before we wrap up?
The one final thought is, and I've been doing a proposal today for one of our clients, and, you know, they're looking at their marketing technology stack. And basically what they've asked us to do, and it's a little bit outside our swim lane, but they're a really great client. So we're going to kind of do a special project to engage with them in this way. But it's looking at their technology stack and really beginning to think about, you know, this thing has evolved over the past 5 to 10 years. And, you know, how should it be evolving over the next 5 to 10 years or even closer horizons? But it's, you know, management framework and taxonomy and a lot of other things that helps them think about. But one of the things that that's interesting about the thought process is, and they haven't explicitly said it, but it's clearly implied in kind of how they're beginning to think about it, is this notion of experimentation. How do we stay abreast of what's that next thing out there? How do I, you know, kind of cut through the marketing hype and the sales reps posturing to get at what is the thing that really is going to help me transform my business? And it also kind of ties back to one of those recommendations in the Gartner report, which is this whole notion of proof of concepts. And are you experimenting at different layers in the stack, whether it's kind of your back-end support systems, it's those customer-facing things, or all the magic in the middle that helps connect those two things? But are you doing those proof of concepts to try to discern where is the opportunity? And, you know, again, as I was sitting in the room just before the holiday with the client in a workshop talking this through, that really was the subtext to the discussion was, we'd like to be able to think about our marketing technology portfolio more operationally, not as a strategic exercise, but as a operational exercise. And part of that would be this experimentation and proof of concepts. And we've certainly found, you know, when we talk to companies, I'd love to close big deals, but I love to close big deals when I've demonstrated I have value. And so can I do proof of concepts to show these companies that it works? And so anyway, it was just interesting to hear a client, you know, kind of come at it. Gartner said it. I've heard, you know, some other folks come at it as well, is that, you know, this notion of proof of concept, you know, before you write the big check, write a smaller check and, you know, really demonstrate that this is something that's going to have value. And, you know, you may find that it doesn't. Okay, great. You took a low risk swing at the ball and it didn't go well. But you also might find that it's not a home run, but boy, it really works for this piece of the business, right? Oh, this use case. Right. And that's part of what this client of ours was beginning to get at, is there are certain components in the MarTech stack that might be right for one line of business, but another line of business has to go another way. And you won't know that until you're able to run the experiment. And they wanted a framework that allows them to do that. And so again, it was just kind of an interesting notion that was a bit of an aside to our relationship with them, but I think an important one, and you know, something I've tucked away as I now think about talking to our clients, certainly talking to our audience, is how do proof of concepts, how does experimentation, how does discovery happen within your marketing technology stack, within your marketing processes, and how do you create a framework that allows you to do that?
Yeah, it makes total sense. Well, we talked about this on a past episode, and I know we got to wrap up timing-wise, but we talked about this on a past episode about, you know, you get good at what you rehearse, and it's this idea of if you can't predict the future, which a lot of times, let's be fair, you can't. What you do have to be good at is adapting quickly. Right. So that fits a lot. That makes a ton of sense. Look at that.
I tied it all together.
That's fantastic. So we agree that personalization is going to be dead by 2025, at least in the way that we know it. You know, we agree that, you know, we've got to think about how we do personalization without personal information and how fundamentally you have to get good at moving fast to provide relevant customer experiences. Steve, that's a great place to wrap. Any last words before I let you go?
I'm good to go. I got to get working on those proposals.
Fantastic. All right. Make some money. Thanks. Great talking to you. Catch up with you next time.
Take care, Tim.
All right. Bye now.
Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter, and learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast, on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. You can also find us on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/company/solosegment, on Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody.